You could not run away from there. Having started from there, now peel off. Why? For the simple reason that God is untouched. Klesha karma vipakashayair aparamrishtaha. God is not influenced or affected by what you, as a limited individual, seem to be affected, which means fear, sorrow, grief, stupidity, ignorance. All these things do not exist in this God. And that is why you can approach Him, you can surrender yourself to Him and be freed from your own limitations. This God is unlimited, unconditioned, and therefore by surrendering myself totally to this God, I also become unconditioned. I also becomes unconditioned. The wave, as a wave, is subject to being disturbed by the wind that rustles the surface of the lake, and the moment the wave merges in the lake, it is no longer capable of being ruffled. When the wave comes up, you probably have seen in, in the sea, when a breaker comes up and there is a wind or something, or the surfers, they can disturb the crest of the wave. But once the wave subsides, merges in the ocean, it is free. I is conditioned, I is limited, and therefore I is subjected to all this fear, anxiety, jealousy and so on and so forth that we discussed earlier. But Ishvara being the totality, why is it the totality? That is, the totality is what remains after all these conditions have been dropped away, peeled off. Visheshaha. But this again is merely assumed, asserted, affirmed by the devotee. He does not intellectualize all this. He contemplates God and he knows that God is omnipotent, omniscient, everything. Omnipresent. He is unconditioned, He is infinite, He is that, He is supreme bliss. And to that God, I surrender myself. And when the I is surrendered in this manner to that omnipresent, omnipotent, infinite being, there is freedom, instant freedom. As long as the surrender is complete and total. Mm-hmm. There is a lovely little story is told. I am sure all of us have heard it. I think it's current in all traditions. There is a a king and his minister. They used to go hunting every weekend. And one Saturday morning, they were having breakfast, and the king was cutting an apple. The royal knife was a bit too sharp, and he cut chipped off a bit of his finger. And he said, "Yai." The minister was a philosopher, and he said, "Ah, it's good for you, Majesty. It's good for you." And he got furious, had him arrested, taken away, and as he was being handcuffed and pulled off from the royal presence, he said, "This is good for me, no, don't worry. It's God's will." That was God's will, and this is also God's will. I must have the courage to say that. Not only when things are going right, but even when things are going wrong, I must have the courage to say it's also God's will. Then the surrender is correct. Then the king went alone hunting. And there were a few bandits, robbers in that forest, who had taken a vow that if one of their robberies turned out successful, they would offer a human sacrifice to Kali. The robbery was successful, and therefore they were looking for a human being to sacrifice. And there walked in this king. They got hold of him. And he didn't know what to do. He was alone, and there were many. So meekly he walked to the temple. The time is up. And these robbers brought in their priest. Before the sacrifice, he had to be bathed ceremonially and so on. He was stripped. And as the priest was pouring water on his head to bathe him, he came to this little bandage. He says, "What is that?" "Oof, I cut myself this morning." And the priest gave him one resounding slap. "Get out. You are unfit to be sacrificed." Something which has already been cut cannot be offered in sacrifice to the goddess. "Get out." He said, "Thank you very much. Can you can hit me again if you want to, but thank you." And jumped on the horse and raced towards his palace. And on the way he remembered, "My God, that fellow said so. It's good for you." And so, but for this little accident, I might have lost my life today. And he went to the palace and went straight to the cell, opened the cell and released his minister and said, "Thank you very much. You prove, what you said proved right." And he said, "That's okay. But tell me," said the king, "there's one thing which is puzzling me. I unjustly had you arrested and put in the cell, and you said it's good for you. Can you rationally justify that also?" He said, the minister said, "Obvious. If you had not locked me up here, I would have come with you." What happens in our own life may not be so easy to see, so dramatic, but it's true. If you have that perseverance in seeing the divine in everything that happens, then you are liberated. Klesha karma parama aparamrishtaha purusha vishesha ishvara. And so, since the divine that is omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresence is not involved in klesha karma, total surrender to that, to the divine, is another way of freeing oneself from the vrittis. Klesha and karma. Karma, I think we know. Karma, I think we know. And therefore, the whole karma yoga is woven into this. The concept of karma, the concept of karma yoga is also woven into this. How does one overcome this karma? It's also mentioned later in the sutras. In the case of yogis, says Patanjali, karmas or actions are neither black nor white. Trividham itaresham. Neither good nor, whatever the yogi does is neither good nor evil, because he doesn't have the sense of doership. Whatever happens to him happens by God's grace. Whatever he is able to do is also God's will, God's grace. Completely and totally. There is no ego sense at all. In which case, what he does is does not has no focal point for the karma to rebound. The karma rebounds on you only as long as The ego sense projects it. Otherwise it is lost in infinity. It's lost in infinity. It has no starting point and therefore it has no point to return to. So in God there is no karma. What happens in the infinite does not happen. It is only in relation to a finite point that one assumes that there is also a finite goal. But when there is a movement in the cosmos, in the infinite, there is no movement. I think you know the scientific theory that the whole universe or the solar system is dropping in space. From where to where and what to what? In relation to, as they say, to an assumed central point, which they call a black hole. Even that is an assumption. Motion is motion only in relation to something else. If that something else is not there, there is no motion. So karma is karma only in relation to something else. An action returns as reaction only as long as the starting point is a point, is a stationary point. If action springs from the infinite, it's non-action. Action that constantly is generated in the infinite, if it is generated at all, it is non-action. So in God there is no karma. And nor is there klesha. Klesha is another serious thing. We'll come to that later. Klesha is distress, psychological distress. Emotional upheaval. Emotional trauma. Fear, anxiety, jealousy, sorrow, grief, unhappiness, misery, all these, life and death, all these things do not affect God. God is not subject to any of these because of the absence of the ego sense. Movement of energy in consciousness is interpreted as happiness and unhappiness, pleasure and pain, only by that ego sense. If that is not there, if you are not standing outside when a freezing cold wind is blowing, there is no one to say it is freezing. Space does not say it is freezing. Wind does not say it is freezing. You call the wind freezing. The wind does not come and whisper into your ear, "Oh, it's cold." Space does not say so. And snow itself does not say so. Therefore, there is neither klesha or distress nor karma, action and reaction, in the infinite. All these are merely interpretations of the ego sense, of the movement of energy in consciousness. Tatra niratishayam sarvajna bijam. Oh, it's beautiful. Tatra, he merely says tatra. In that, maybe in that surrender itself, or maybe in God. Tatra can be merely in that. It's a sutra, it's a sort of laconic expression which one has to interpret according to one's own light. Tatra, once you have surrendered yourself in that itself, or in God, there is niratishayam sarvajna bijam. It's a super wonderful omniscience. Omniscience. One who has surrendered himself to God is omniscient. And so, what did I do with my finger mala? Is there somebody omniscient here? Can you tell me where it is? That is not the type of omniscience they refer to. Omniscience means knowing all things at the same time. Knowing the ground of all things at the same time. Knowing the reality at the same time. Or becoming that reality instantly. Which in fact only means this, that in that person there is no confusion. When this ego sense is completely surrendered, when this vritti, when the basic vritti of I am is totally surrendered, and when it merges in the infinite, all the confusions and all the divisions brought about by its assumed independence are immediately set at rest. That's all. It is not omniscience, again, in relation to something else, another event. It is not an interpretation. It's an instantaneous dissolution of all confusion, of all doubt, of all questioning, of all quest. How do I... What is this God called, and how do I call upon this God, and how do I link myself, how do I tune myself, how do I contact this God? Tasya vachaka pranavaha. This God. His form has been described. What is the form? That which remains after everything, all the unreality has been eliminated. After you have peeled off, neti, 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 neti. Not this, not this, not this, not this, not this. All mental concepts and all the trappings. When all of them have been pulled away, what remains is God. If that is abundantly clear, then we can go on to the naming aspect. What is God called, so that I may call him by his proper name? Oh, God has no name, says Patanjali. Tasya vachaka pranava, it's vaguely indicated by Om. God's presence is indicated by Om. I can hear. Maybe it's tape recorder, never mind, but I can hear. When you listen to any sound, it's the tape recorder that is doing it. Oh, I see, the cascade. Water.
God.
Maybe God. When you listen to this, when you listen to any undifferentiated sound, it is Om. The sound in which your mind does not create a division in terms of all these vowels and consonants and so on. When all these blend into one homogeneous sound, that is Om. And that is heard everywhere all the time. You stick your thumbs into your mouth, into your ears. And so there is God, God, God everywhere. Tasya vachaka pranavaha. And this sound is everywhere all the time. It's not absent from anywhere at any time. When you stick your thumb into your ears, you hear this. But then someone says, oh, no, that's due to this capillary bleeding, capillary blood circulation. That is, the differentiation is started. The confusion is started. One must learn to listen to this sound, feeling that this is the name of God, because this section deals with the emotional approach or the devotional approach to the same truth. And therefore no thinking is allowed here, no rationalization is allowed, and no condemnation is allowed, no criticism is allowed. Just a pure heart-to-heart relationship. How do I use this om? Tad japas tad artha bhavanam. Go on repeating it. Why must I repeat it? For the simple reason that the first time I uttered it, or the first time I heard it, it didn't click, so I repeat it. If it clicked, okay, that's the end of it. You don't have to say it again once more. If it clicked and if you attained enlightenment, stop it there. It has dropped away. The mantra has dropped away already. It has served its purpose. Tad japas tad artha bhavanam. The second is even more important. Repeat the mantra om, but at the same time contemplating the artha. Artha is difficult to translate. Artha does not mean paraphrase, as artha does not mean a verbal equivalent, a dictionary meaning, but artha means substance. Artha is the substance, is the object, the thing denoted by the word. The word is kerchief, and this is kerchief, not a piece of cloth, etc. That's a paraphrase. My schoolmaster used to tell me a lovely little story of the uselessness of using words to understand words. It seems a young boy was taking postal lessons. There used to be many postal tuition centers in England in those days, and they used to send round postal lessons to young people in India. And they could take some kind of diplomas and degrees and so on by postal tuition. And this fellow was taking some postal lessons, and he was studying civics. And he didn't know, I mean, the civics lessons were prepared by somebody in England. The civics system in India was different. And in one lesson he came across the word county. First he thought there was a spelling mistake, country it was. They had typed it county. But the same word occurred again and again and again, which made him feel probably there is a thing called county. What do I do? Look up the dictionary. So he pulled out the dictionary, turned a few pages, came to the word county. County, noun, so and so. Shire, S-H-I-R-E. At least counties seem to be a spelling mistake. Now shire is a totally unknown word. Okay, now mind, go on, turn some more pages, he came to shire. Shire, S-H-I-R-E, noun, meaning county. County means shire, shire means county. Now what do you know? What do you know about county? And what do you know about shire? This is what happens when one finds a word meaning for another word. When you paraphrase an expression, it leaves you cold, except that you have a lot more words. You have learnt a lot more, many more words now. So that all those words create such a heavy burden on the brain that it cannot bear anymore, and it thinks it knows, oh, because I can use so many words instead of one word. That is not what the Sanskrit word artha means. The Sanskrit word artha means meaning, in the sense, this is the meaning of the word handkerchief. Meaning not in the sense of paraphrase, but the thing in itself. When it is, this is shown to you, you know the meaning of the word handkerchief immediately, directly. In the same way, you are contemplating, you are repeating the mantra Om, contemplating what it actually means. And thereby we have come to the very essence of meditation. One may adopt from here on any method one likes. As I am repeating this mantra, where does this mantra happen? What is this? What is this sound? How is the sound produced? Or how is it possible for this sound to be heard at all? So one step, two steps, I am in this cosmic intelligence again. Whichever be the path we may choose, whichever be the technique we may adopt, we come to the same goal, if you want to call it, in just a couple of steps. That's why it's called Raja Yoga.